Get your fill of baseball news and beer reviews at foulballarea.com. Follow our blog for the latest news around the baseball world and read about some of our favorite ballpark beers. Tune into the podcast every Wednesday as we take a deep dive into the topics of the day. Stay connected by signing up for our mailing list or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at foulballarea. Now, here's today's episode of the Foulball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins and Trey Lyle. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foulball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Thank you all for tuning in today. We've got a good one for you today. Of course, Game 1 of the World Series was last night. The Dodgers take Game 1 by a score of 8-3 over the Tampa Bay Rays. It was a good game for the first couple of innings, and then the Dodgers just kind of blew it open later in the game. But here to help me break it down is my co-host, Trey Lyle. Trey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, you know. I have to record this under unique circumstances while I'm on the road right now. But did get to watch the game last night, and always good to hear your voice, Matthew.
So just starting off, let's get right into it. What did you think, your overall thoughts of last night's game one?
Well, overall, the Dodgers are too good. Their lineup is you need perfection from pitching to beat the Los Angeles Dodgers with how good their lineup is. And Clayton Kershaw looked like Clayton Kershaw, not playoffs Kershaw last night. And he did exactly what the Dodgers needed from him. And the Dodgers got a big game one win to take advantage of this series. I think they might have had a slight advantage, and maybe this is kind of the way to amend home field if you want to do a bubble, is they've played in that park already this year while the Rays haven't, so they might understand the dynamics of it a little bit better. So big win by the Dodgers, and their lineup just seems to be too good. John Hindman of MLB Network tweeted, is like, Dodgers are good that they have maybe three of the top 10 players, you know, Betts, Bellinger, maybe Corey Seager, and none of them hit 3-4. And that just shows how good the Dodgers lineup is. What were your thoughts, Matt?
I thought it was a really entertaining game. It was a close game the first couple of innings. The Dodgers had one big inning late in the game that really blew it open and made it less exciting. They did look like they were levels above the Tampa Bay Rays in Game 1. I think it will end up being a closer series than last night made it look. But last night, the Dodgers were definitely the far better team. And Clayton Kershaw, you're right, and I want to get into this a little bit later, but Clayton Kershaw had a fantastic outing. And I've been saying this all postseason, and I said it yesterday. I was on a podcast with Billy Parvetam and Corey Van Dyke, and I said that Clayton Kershaw just has this unfair narrative. Like, he has had his bad moments in the postseason, but he's not as bad of a postseason pitcher as everyone makes him out to be. I think it's a little bit of an unfair narrative, and so he really shut down the haters last night with his fantastic game one outing. But let's get into this game a little deeper, go kind of inning by inning. In the top of the first, I mean, they start the game off with a single by Yandy Diaz, and then Brandon Lau pops out, but then Randy Arozarena comes up and Kershaw walks him, so he has two runners on with one out. So it does look like he's, you know, playoff Kershaw here in the top of the first inning, starting the game off not too hot. But then he gets Hunter Renfro to strike out, and Manuel Margot grounds out to Clayton Kershaw to end the inning. So he gets out of the jam there in the top of the first, and then the Dodgers come up in the bottom of the first, but they can't get anything going as Mookie Betts grounds out, Corey Seager walks, and then Turner and Muncy each fly out after Seager. So kind of a lackluster first inning. It did look like Kershaw struggled a little bit in the top of the first, but he was able to get out of it.
You were right about Kershaw, and John Smoltz kind of brought it up in the broadcast. He just had to settle in after the first inning. He really needed to kind of settle into the baseball game, which happens sometimes. And I completely agree with you about the narrative around Clayton Kershaw. I mean, this guy should go down as one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and he's proven it. I mean, if this game goes past four games, he's probably going to have the lead in postseason strikeouts, passing Verlander, because he got over 200 last night, and 206 is where Verlander's at. Obviously, Justin Verlander can't add to his total this year, so he's going to be the all-time strikeout leader by the end of the postseason, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the pod. But Yeah, Kershaw looked good, and you know, Tyler Glasnow had a good start as well in the first inning. The bottom half of the first, he looked good to start the game.
So then we go to the second inning, and Clayton Kershaw really settled in after that top of the first. In the second, three straight outs, Wendell flies out, Adames strikes out, and Kiermaier flies out to end the inning. The Dodgers get a single in the bottom of the second, but that was all they get. So again, not much going on in the second inning, but Kershaw looks really good in the top of the second, shutting down the Rays' offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this was definitely looking like a pitcher's duel for the first part of this game, and I think we're more likely to see a couple of pitching duels just because both staffs are really good. I mean, you're going to throw out Walker Buehler in game two and I think Blake Snell for the Rays, I'm pretty sure off the top of my head. And so that's a dynamic pitching matchup, and you get Tyler Glasnow, Clayton Kershaw, you should expect a pitcher's duel. But as the game went on, the Dodgers lineup just was too good.
So then we go to the third inning, and Kershaw really settled into the game now. Strikes out Zunino, Diaz grounds out, and then he strikes out Lau to end the inning. The Dodgers can't get anything going in the third either. They get a couple of strikeouts. Corey Seager did walk, but then Turner striked out to end the inning. So then in the fourth, Kershaw again, two more strikes out as he strikes out Randy Rosarena, who's the hottest player in baseball right now. Hunter Renfro grounds out, and then Manuel Margot strikes out to end the inning. And the bottom of the fourth is where the Dodgers start to come to life. Max Muncy walks to begin the inning. Will Smith grounds out, so there's one out, runner on first. And Cody Bellinger comes up to the plate, and he continues his momentum from Game 7 of the NLCS, and he hits a towering fly ball home run to center field, scores Max Muncy. Dodgers go up 2-0 in the bottom of the fourth.
Yeah, I tweeted this last night. It looks like – and he made, obviously, a great catch, a home run-saving play later in the game. But Cody Bellinger's back to MVP form. Mookie Betts looked like the MVP kind of player he was. Corey Seager's playing like an MVP right now. We kind of touched on three of the top 10 players in baseball. I mean, it's very Golden State Warriors with Kevin Durant like right now for the Dodgers. And the crazy part is, because there's no salary cap in baseball, the Dodgers have control of them for the next decade. And so I think with those three guys as your pillars on your offense, with throwing in guys like a Josh Turner, a Will Smith, a Max Muncy, a Jock Peterson, I mean, I could keep going on. Kiki Hernandez, who homered, has come up big. I mean, where can't you kind of find a homer in this lineup? And, you know, watch out, folks. If the Dodgers have Mookie, which we'll touch more on later in the game, and Cody Bellinger playing like, you know, two top five players in baseball, which they did in this game, I mean, they're unbeatable. They're plain and simple unbeatable. And I love the Tampa Bay Rays and how they're structured, and give them all credit. But sometimes just like you got, it's too many bats. And so that's what happened in this game. And it started in that fourth inning.
So then after
what were your thoughts?
Well, yeah. Cody Bellinger is just playing really well right now. The home run in Game 7 of the NLCS to put the Dodgers on top, and ultimately ended up being the game-winning home run over the Braves. Obviously, I was really sad at the time, but it was a big home run, big moment from Bellinger. And then he comes up big with the first run of the game for the Dodgers, hitting the home run in Game 1 of the World Series last night. He is playing really well, and you're right. I mean, they have three of the best players in baseball at this moment. Mookie Betts is obviously always going to be at the top of the list, but Corey Seager, he had a couple of good years. You know, he was Rookie of the Year, and everyone had really high hopes for him, and then he just kind of disappeared for a couple of years, but now he's back playing at a high level again. Bellinger, of course, he was the MVP last year, didn't have as great of a regular season this year, but he's having a fantastic postseason. So those three players, along with the rest of their lineup, I mean, you are right, there's no weak spot in this Dodgers lineup.
Yeah, and I think for Corey Seager, obviously, he had that season-ending injury that basically was the reason why Manny Machado became a Dodger. And so I think sometimes when you miss that many, that much time in a year, it might take a whole season really to find your legs. And I think that's kind of what happened is it took a whole season for the Dodgers kind of to find their – or Corey Seager, I should say, to find his legs and come back into it. I saw this last night, and it, granted, it was a couple of former Dodger players saying Mookie Betts was better than Mike Trout. And why I think he might be one of maybe the two to three players that deserves an argument for best player in the world, I still can't see it. Like, I love Mookie, and I think – well, I love Mookie now. I didn't like Mookie as a Red Sox. And we'll touch on why Mookie Betts is the real MVP in a matter of moments after Major League Baseball was trying to perform highway robbery to America. But he deserves conversation in that argument with Mike Trout. But it's just – and I'd love to hear your thoughts, and I know this is kind of a sidebar, but – I'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, is Mookie close to Mike Trout, or is there a gap, you think, between those two players?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think real quick before we get back to the game. But I think that he's close to Mike Trout, but he is not better than Mike Trout. And I don't know if you follow Jeremy Frank on Twitter, but he posted something last night, because I saw some people talking about this also, and Jeremy Frank had a reply to this argument. He said that the reason Mike Trout is the best player in baseball is because every time that someone else might be, we compare them to Mike Trout. So every time Mookie Betts starts playing really well, we say, is Mookie Betts better than Mike Trout? Or when Aaron Judge plays really well, we say, is Judge better than Trout? Is Harper better than Trout? Is Machado better than Trout? So we always compare them to Mike Trout. So Mike Trout is the best in the game.
Yeah, I think you nailed it right on the head, man. And so I just, like, at this point, I think it obviously proves, I think the Mike Trout conversation proves that in baseball, one player can't affect a team as much as, definitely basketball. I mean, like, if you want to compare the two, really the best two players of their sport are in Los Angeles. And that is, you know, obviously LeBron James at basketball and obviously Mike Trout at baseball. LeBron James can take a really bad basketball team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, for example, and get them to the NBA Finals. Mike Trout can't do that with the Los Angeles Angels. And obviously Mike Trout now has a top 20 player in Anthony Rendon on his team, and it still wasn't out. I mean, they were the worst team in the AL West this year. And the AL West was not a great division, all things considered. You know, they had the Astros who made the ALCS. The Astros had a losing record. So it is what it is. And I always, like, when this conversation comes up, I just am like, man, I wish Mike Trout played on a better team, because it'd be much more fun just to see that guy in the postseason. Because I think what's going to hurt him down the line when we make this GOAT debate is – if the guy never has any postseason success. I mean, like, it's always part of these debates. Like, it kind of gets tiresome at some points. And in sports, I mean, the reason why Tom Brady is considered the GOAT is not because he's second all-time in passing touchdowns. It's because he has 6 Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
And so seeing Mike Trout not make the postseason, I know we're supposed to talk about the World Series, and the beauty of Mike Trout is he's still so good, he's entering the GOAT debate without having any postseason success, which is incredible. But let's get back to the World Series.
All right, so we go to the top of the fifth, and this is really the only blemish on Clayton Kershaw's night. With 2 outs, Kevin Kiermaier comes up to the plate, and he hits a home run to right field, makes the game 2-1, cuts the lead in half for the Rays. But then Mike Zunino strikes out and the inning's over. Then we go to the bottom of the fifth, 2-1 game, Dodgers with the lead. Mookie Betts leads off with a walk, steals second base, gives all of America a free taco, so thanks, Mookie.
But America tried to get, MLB tried to steal it from us, because earlier, Chris Taylor got a stolen base, but they deemed it a wild pitch. I thought it was a stolen base. Chris Taylor should have been the one that gave us free tacos, but thank you, Mookie, for saving us.
Then Corey Seager comes up to the plate. He walks. Justin Turner's at bat. Seager and Betts each steal a base, so there's runners on second and third with one out. Turner strikes out. Max Muncy reaches on a fielder's choice. Betts comes home to score. It's 3-1 Dodgers. Will Smith comes up to the plate. He singles, makes it 4-1 Dodgers. Chris Taylor singles. Enrique Hernandez singles. By the end of the inning, it's 6-1 in favor of the Dodgers, and it looks like they're ready to put this game away.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted this when the game got broke open. You have to be perfect against the Los Angeles Dodgers lineup. I mean, once you have one crack, it's over. If their lineup's too good and they blow it open, and that's basically what happened in the fifth.
So by this point, Mookie Betts has stolen two bases, scored a run, given all of America free tacos.
Which they try to steal from us. I'm not going to let him forget, because that play to Tyler was perfectly – I don't think it was a wild pitch. I think Taylor was going anyway. I mean, he basically stole third if Jock Peterson didn't foul that ball off on the next one. I know this was in the fourth inning, right? Yes, it was in the fourth inning.
Yeah.
And Chris Taylor realized America needs its Doritos Locos Taco. And so he tried to steal, but Major League Baseball wanted to take it away from us. But it's okay. Mookie saved us. So shout out to Mookie Betts. That was the best thing he did all night.
I don't know about the best thing he did all night, but it was pretty great. He comes up to lead off the bottom of the sixth inning for the Dodgers, and he hits a home run to right field that makes it 7-1. In doing this, Mookie Betts became the first player in World Series history to homer, steal two bases, and score two runs in a single game.
He's really good, man. I don't know why the Red Sox had to trade him. It's whatever they got for him, it's not as good as Mookie. I mean, you could argue this is the second time the Boston Red Sox have traded the best player in baseball. I mean, granted, the other one caused them the worst curse, maybe second worst curse ever. In baseball history, if you believe in that kind of stuff, but
you know, I was thinking this morning before we started recording, is Mookie Betts going to cause another curse of the Bambino for the Red Sox? Like, who knows? I mean, like you said, he is one of the best players in baseball. They traded him away.
I would enjoy that.
I'm sure you would.
You know, I think you ask any Red Sox fan, they're like, this is the dumbest trade we could have made. Because you could have figured out the money. Like, David Ortiz said it last night. He's like, hell, I'd give him some money. Like, he's too good. He's too good. Like, I think we should really make an argument, have the argument in baseball now is like, who's the best player in baseball? And we just don't count Mike Trout. Like, and we'll talk about Mike Trout, Mookie, a little bit later in the podcast, but like, how did the Red Sox not pay this guy? And it just proved it last night where he was dynamic, and this is the second time he gave America free tacos, so he's done America two great services.
Yeah, Fox had a little graphic during the game after he stole the base to win the free tacos. It said, in his career, he has one MVP, one World Series championship, and twice he's given America free tacos. Which of those is really the important accomplishments?
I think the tacos. It's obviously the MVP and the World Series title, but the tacos are a great bonus. And so next Wednesday, you can get free tacos in 1 week.
By the way, if you download the Taco Bell app and order through the app, you don't have to wait until Wednesday to get your free taco.
Look at that. Matt knows what's up.
Yeah, pro tip. Also, order through the app, get a free taco today. Still go to Taco Bell next Wednesday, get another free taco. Pro tip, there you go.
Bam. Now, if every American did that, you think about that. Mookie Betts gave every American two free tacos. And it's not just a regular taco. It's a Doritos Locos taco.
Yeah, even better. So Mookie Betts homers to lead off the bottom of the sixth inning at 7-1 in favor of the Dodgers. Later in the inning, Justin Turner doubles. There's a runner on second with one out for the Dodgers, and Max Muncy comes up to the plate. He hits a double to right field. That scores Turner, makes it 8-1 in favor of the Dodgers. The Rays would get two runs across in the seventh on a couple of singles from Mike Brosseau and Kevin Kiermaier, but that was all they would get, and the game ended 8-3 with the Dodgers taking home the Game 1 win. They go up 1-0 in the World Series. Clayton Kershaw finished the night with 6 innings pitched, gave up 1 run on 2 hits, walked 1 batter, and struck out 8. After the first inning, he only allowed 1 hit in the rest of the game, and it was that home run by Kevin Kiermaier. Other than that, he was perfect in his final 5 innings. And like you said, he moves into second place in postseason strikeouts with 201 career strikeouts. He joins Justin Verlander as the only pitchers with 200 postseason strikeouts. Great game by the Dodgers. They really looked fantastic. They were, just levels above the Tampa Bay Rays in last night's game. But I really do think it's going to end up being a closer series than last night made it look.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Rays pitching is too good. My only concern for the Tampa Bay Rays, and their offense came from not Randy Arozarena, is will their offense come from people outside of Randy Arozarena? Because basically, Randy Arozarena carried their offense through the ALCS, and to face the Dodgers, they're going to need to score runs no matter how great their pitching is, and they're going to need guys to step up outside of the dynamic rookie.
Yeah, they definitely are. He's been playing great all postseason with 7 postseason home runs, 10 RBIs, batting .382. But they need the other guys in the lineup to step up. Brandon Lau, he's a good player. They need him to produce some offense. You know, Manuel Margot, Kevin Kiermaier, Mike Zunino, Mike Brosseau. They need those guys to step up. They can't just rely on Randy Arozarena because he went 0-3 last night against the Dodgers pitching. So they need the other guys in their lineup to step up. I do think, though, that, you know, the Dodgers do have great pitching. They have Walker Buehler, who should get the start tonight. And then I don't know who gets the start in Game 3. But after Buehler and Kershaw, who else, what other really good starters do the Dodgers have? And actually, I'm staying corrected. It's Tony Gonsolin getting the start tonight. Buehler will get the start in Game 3. So Gonsolin tonight, he's not a great pitcher. I think the Rays might be able to get to him.
Yeah, we'll see. I think the crazy part is, though, as long as you have Kershaw and Buehler, you can get 2 games out of them each. If they win those, that's the series. So for the Rays, you're going to have to win at least one between the Kershaw-Buehler games, which will be hard. I think the fact that Dustin May start Game 7 shows a lot of faith the Dodgers organization has in him. Granted, he's young, but he was technically their opening day starter. Granted, that was because Kershaw got hurt, but they have him. Julio Urias showed his ability to shut down people, and he can be a versatile arm. And then Kinsley Jansen is not Kinsley Jansen of old, but he's still a great closer for them. So the Dodgers, the thing is, the Dodgers don't need great pitching to win. Their lineup's too good. Like, the Dodgers can give up 3 runs and still win comfortably because their lineup is that good. The thing is, the Rays basically, like, the reason why I picked the Dodgers to win, and you posted our predictions yesterday, is the Dodgers don't have to be perfect and they can win a game in this series. The Rays have to be perfect 4 times, and I don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. So Dodgers are up 1-0 in the series. Game 2 is tonight at 8:08 p.m. It'll be Blake Snell on the mound for the Rays versus Tony Gonsolin on the mound for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Dodgers have a 1-0 lead. I think it should be a good game. Hopefully a little closer, a little more exciting than last night. Trey, any final thoughts from World Series Game 1?
Yeah, shout out to Joe Buck. He's about to he's calling 7 games in 7 days, and like basically leading up to the World Series, he's going to get like 1 day off, and that's next Monday. So how it worked is, starting last Sunday, he called an NFL game, because of COVID, he had to call Monday night. The Thursday night game for last week got moved to Monday, so he called that game. Called game one yesterday, game two tonight, and then Thursday, he's got Thursday night football for my Eagles, face the Giants. Then he goes game three, game four, Friday, Saturday, and then another football game Sunday. So it's two aspiring broadcasters. That is who's taken a play-by-play class and done some play-by-play. Doing one game is a very big stress on your voice. I wish luck to Mr. Buck's vocal cords, and I think it just proves why Joe Buck, love him or hate him, is still one of the best in the game, and is going to be grinding hard this next week.
I don't hate Joe Buck as much as I don't hate him at all. I don't dislike him as much as some people do. You know, some people really, really don't like it when he's calling a game. But I really liked Joe Davis the other night calling game 7 of the NLCS. I thought he did a really good job, and I hope that eventually Fox will promote him to their number one MLB guy.
I agree. I will say this, though, and this is kind of like just thinking about it, like Joe Davis is the Dodgers play-by-play guy, so it's a little bit weird, like, having him call, you know, the biggest game for the Dodgers. But other than that, like, I like Joe Davis, too, and I think Joe Buck gets a very bad rap. Like, Joe Buck is really good at his job, and, like, the fact, like, he wouldn't get the opportunities he did from Fox, and the fact that he literally goes, like, one day he's calling a football game, and the next day he's calling the World Series. And so, like, just to think about how big those sporting events are, like, there are very few broadcasters that call the big pillar events. Like, I think Jim Nantz will call, like, if CBS has CBS has the Super Bowl, he calls the Super Bowl, the Masters, the Final Four. And Buck will call, if Buck has it, then he calls the Super Bowl, the World Series, the U.S. Open. Like, the fact that he gets those opportunities prove they're good. And yes, I think Joe Davis is the future, and so I agree with that. But put some respect to my guy Joe Buck's name, folks. And that's coming from me, Yankees fan. So.
All right. Well, I've got to get to work here soon. I've got to work the 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. show on MLB Network Radio today. We have Eric Kratz actually joining us as a guest today on a Zoom call, so we'll see if he recognizes me. But looking forward to catching up with him again.
Who do you have?
Eric Kratz.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. Had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago, so hopefully he'll remember me. We'll see.
Well, I'm actually heading to work, too, for my new job. I think I'm going to be tweeting it out today. So check me out I think I'll be on air today, but check out The Fast Lane with Ed Lane, 5 to 6 p.m. on CBS Sports Lynchburg. Glad to be joining the Virginia Talk Radio Network as I'm back in Virginia, and I am back working again, Matthew.
Good job. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man. I'm proud of you, too.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the podcast. For Trey Lyle, I'm Matthew Atkins. We'll talk to you maybe next week, maybe sometime later this week, as we continue to break down the 2020 World Series.
Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.